My name is Kaylee Caudill, and I'm a freshman at the University of Kentucky with an Agricultural Medical Biotechnology major and an Appalachian Studies minor. Today, I'm going to be reading my story called Back to Reality, which is in the Cancer in Appalachia, a collection of New Told Stories, Volume 1. I'm going to her to her follow-up visit with Dr. Ron. I don't know why she went to her first visit alone, but that's Eloise, independent and strong. It's one of the reasons I fell in love with her. I'll never forget the day when she burst through the door, tears streaming down her face, and told me that she had cancer. We were starting down a path that neither of us wanted to take. As we walked through the maze that is Bellevue Cancer Center, I try to find a way to talk about this without outright saying, "Hey, has cancer got you down?" This wasn't anything we thought that would ever happen to us. Growing up in Kentucky, we have seen cancer all our lives, but the disease is normal for our community. We got so used to seeing it around us that it wasn't big news when someone was diagnosed, but when it's someone close to you, it's different. My parents died when I was too young to remember them, and I don't really have anyone else in my life besides Eloise and our close friends. I think that is why I never prepare myself for a talk like this. Even so, I finally build up the nerve to ask, "How are you doing?" "I'm fine," she replies dryly. I can tell she is just trying to act like she's okay with the whole thing for me, which I love her indefinitely for. But I wish she would just talk to me about what she's going through so I can try to comfort her in any way I can. "I know you are, but if you ever want to let me into that little brain of yours, I'm here for you. You know that, right?" I say, smiling. "Of course. I'm just trying to find a way to deal with this," she sighs. "It's just a lot. Don't worry about me, okay? I'll get through this," she says matter-of-factly. "I'll always worry about you," I say, presenting my brightest smile. As we walk through our final set of doors, we are met with the office of Dr. Ron, a specialist in Eloise's specific type of cancer. I take a deep breath and look at Eloise. She smiles at me, and I look down at our joined hands, trying to push my nerves and anxiety way down and hope for the best as we take our first step through the entryway together, as we do most things in life. Dr. Ron immediately greets us with, "Hi, Eloise, it's great to see you. This must be your fiance," she says, looking up at me. "Yes, hi, Dr. Ron. This is my fiancé, Peter, whom I've told you about," she replies. I make eye contact with the doctor and shake hands with her. She seems kind. She looks very professional, sporting the classic white coat you see on TV and navy blue scrubs. I would like to focus on the minor details of her attire, or the succulents hanging in the corner of her office, or the various graduation certificates displayed on the wall, rather than the fact that we are here to discuss my fiancé's cancer. However, I cannot escape this discussion forever. Although I wish we were meeting under better circumstances, we need to start discussing what is going to happen moving forward. So as you know, you have been officially diagnosed with breast cancer. Unfortunately, after reviewing the tests we performed during your last visit, I've concluded that your breast cancer has become metastatic. I knew that word couldn't be good. She continues, metastatic basically means that cancer started in your breast, but then it spread over time and traveled to other parts of your body. Your cancer is now in your liver, kidney, and part of your brain. I'm very sorry to tell you, but there aren't many options at this point. Honestly, I don't know how I heard what she said because I blacked out for most of it. This is the worst possible thing that could be happening to us. My fiance, who I'm about to get married to, has cancer, and there, quote, isn't much we can do at this point. I don't know how to react or even move, but then I realize how Eloise must be taking all of this, and I immediately turn to her. She looks broken. I can tell she's trying to hold it all in, but a single tear slides down her face, giving her away. She shakes her head, wipes her tears, tries to smile, and says, "I should have come to the doctor sooner, but I didn't think I needed to. I didn't know how bad this could get. I noticed a lump in my left breast a few months ago, but we are usually pretty low on money, and I didn't want to put any pressure on us." I continue to hold her hand. I didn't know about the lump, but I do know the way she's feeling. As a kid or even as an adult, we were never taught to deal with these things. I never learned about cancer in school or how to prevent it. With my job at the county library and Eloise's at a record shop, we've always had a low income, so we don't really go to the doctor as much as we probably should. Until now, I didn't think cancer could be this serious. I try to get out of my own head as I say, "What can we do?" Dr. Ron looks at me sadly. I continue, "I know you said there isn't much you can do, but there has to be something. There's something we can try, but I don't have much faith that it will work at such a progressed stage. Your specific tumors are triple negative, which means they are negative to hormone growth receptors as well as other receptors. As a result, the only option we are left with is aggressive chemotherapy, possibly in combination with immunotherapy drugs." The silence is deafening. I know this is a lot to take in, but I urge you to take your time to. Eloise cuts her off with, "We'll do it if there's a chance that I have to take it, right?" She looks over at me. At this point, I think I'm staring so hard I can see her soul. I don't think I can manage to get a sentence out, but I know she is looking for me to an answer. So I settle for a simple okay. Today marks exactly 6 months and 5 days since Eloise was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, and we decided to start this, quote, journey. They always say the journey is what matters most, not the destination. I'm starting to think that is total bullshit. For lack of a better word, Eloise looks emaciated. Describing her would be like describing a prisoner of war, pallid skin, sunken cheeks, and bruised colored undertones. In addition, the last of her hair has fallen out as a result of her chemotherapy treatment. After her first visit with Dr. Ron, Eloise took to drinking. We all have to deal with tragedy in some way. It's kind of a pick your poison situation, except mine turns out to be knitting and the occasional craft, and Eloise's is a poison that can actually kill her. Vodka. Can't exactly blame her for trying to lessen the blow of our reality, but it still isn't a pretty picture. During this stage of treatment, Eloise has finally started to drink less. This is good news, but it's about the only good news I've gotten this month. Her treatment hasn't worked so far. I haven't seen any progress, and neither has the doctor. While I ponder these thoughts, I walk into Eloise's room where she and Dr. Ron are discussing something. Oh, hi, Peter. We were just talking about a new type of treatment that I think could help treat Eloise's cancer. Dr. Ron starts with a smile, always a smile. That's great, I say as I walk over to Eloise's bedside and grab her hand. What is this new treatment? We are going to try a type of anti-tumor antibiotic that should help kill off her tumors. It's called dactinomycin. Hopefully, it will stop the growth of the tumor cells in your body, she says as she looks at Eloise. Okay, great. We should go for it, I exclaim excitedly. I look at Eloise and receive a small nod, which lets me know that we agree. I don't know if this new medication will help, but I can only hope. We don't have many options in this situation, and we can't really turn down a chance when it comes, can we? Dactinomycin, a drug that comes from the bacterium Streptomyces parvulus and is used alone or with other drugs to treat adults and children with certain types of tumors. Eloise has been on this drug for about a month, and as much as I wanted it to work, it just hasn't. Her condition hasn't changed. Her skin is still stretched taut over her bones, and she now must be tube-fed because she becomes nauseous and vomits every time she tries to eat. I've tried and tried for months. Hell, since she got diagnosed, I've tried to stay full of hope. But watching Eloise go through this is starting to make me lose what little hope I had. I'm sitting in a chair in Eloise's hospital room, which has become more like my second home. There are pictures of us hung up on the walls. Eloise's favorite throws thrown across the small couch across the room. Flowers adorn her nightstand from her friends at the record shop, at least the ones who bothered to stick around when she was first diagnosed. Eloise is sleeping soundly in her bed and has been for the past couple of hours. Just as I'm about to doze off, Dr. Ron lays her hand on my shoulder and says, "Sorry to disturb you, but we need to talk." It might be the look on her face or the fact that the air in the room suddenly felt static, but I know that whatever she needs to talk to me about can't be good. I stand up to walk into the hallway with her near the nurse's station, and Dr. Ron says, "This isn't going to be easy news for you to take, so I need you to prepare yourself." I try to take a few deep breaths and get ready for the worst, but hope for the best. I'm afraid the new antibiotic we have been treating Eloise with isn't turning out the way we had hoped. The drug isn't reacting well with her tumors, and there isn't anything else we can do at this point. We knew going into this that there weren't many options, and I'm sorry to say we've run out of them. Treating her with chemotherapy and all these drugs is causing her more harm than good at this stage, she says. I prepare for the worst, and that's exactly what I got. So what are you saying? I get out with a shaky voice and tears in my eyes. I think the best decision you can make at this point is to put her in hospice care so that she can be comfortable in her final moments. She doesn't have very long left, Peter. I'm so sorry. Just take some time to think about it and let me know, okay? I nod the best I can and try to hold it together as Dr. Ron walks away. When she finally turns the corner, I burst into tears and slowly slide my back down the wall by Eloise's room till my knees are in my chest. I hide my face and try to wash away this news with my tears. I don't know what to do or even what Eloise would want me to do. Right as I ask myself that question, I hear her call my name. I try to wipe my face so I look a little more composed and enter the room. Eloise is lying in her bed, very, very much awake. She looks perfect. Yes, skinny. Yes, gray. Yes, exhausted. But still my perfect, strong Eloise. Hi, did you just wake up? I ask. I woke up in time to hear that conversation with Dr. Ron, she replies. To that, I don't know what to say, so I stare at her blankly. Peter, I'm not getting any better. I know you don't want to think about the idea of putting me in hospice, but I can feel it. I can feel myself fading away. Every day I wake up, and it is a little bit harder each time. Here the tears come again. If what she says is true and nothing is working to treat me, I'd rather spend my last moments with you in a quiet room without all these cords and tubes hooked up to me, okay? I love you, I say, as I feel the tears slide down my face. I grab her hand and stroke the back of it with my fingers. I will be by your side until the end, no matter what. You know that, right? To which she replies, I know, and I love you for it. A couple weeks later, we are finally all moved into Eloise's new room, which happens to be a lot nicer than her previous one and comes with a very nice view of the Appalachian Hills. I guess they are nicer for a reason since people are sent here to die. I think it's only a matter of time before that becomes her reality. She goes in and out of consciousness as the days go on. Sometimes she is awake and laughing, and others she is delirious or just completely asleep. This seems to me an awake moment. Hi, honey, Eloise says sweetly, with a smile as I enter the room. Hi, I reply with the same amount of warmth. She starts with, I feel better today. I almost feel like my breaths are coming easier. Do I look any better? You always look perfect, I reply. We both know that's not true, but thank you. I don't know. Maybe there is hope. I mean, I feel a lot better today than I have all week, she says matter-of-factly. Yeah, maybe. I try to sound confident on the outside, but on the inside, I know this feeling won't last. This has happened before. She starts to feel better and then she falls right back into the deep end. Okay, well, we should probably get some sleep. I love you, I say as I kiss her on the forehead. I love you more, she says as I make my way to my cot I have set up in her room. I can only close my eyes and try to drift off and let this heartbreak drift away too. When I wake up in the morning, it is to the sounds of beeping machines and people rushing into the room. My vision is blurry, but I can make out flashes of white and navy surrounding the room. When I can finally concentrate enough to focus on what I'm looking at, I can see there are doctors and nurses surrounding Eloise's bed, and someone is giving her CPR right next to me. This is it. My worst nightmare is coming true. I jump out of bed and start to scream. Oh my God, what's happening? Dr. Ron says in an assertive tone, Peter, you do not want to see this. Please step outside. There's no way I'm leaving this room. You have to save her. I bite back. That is what I'm trying to do. Now, please step back, she states. I step back against the wall and watch as they try to revive Eloise. I try not to listen as I can almost hear the sound of her ribs cracking as the doctor bounces up and down on her chest in an effort to restart her heart. I close my eyes and pray. I'm not a religious man, and I don't even think I'm praying to any god, but more or less just to the universe. But I pray they can save her. I almost think my prayers have been answered when I no longer hear the bouncing of her chest until my ears turn to the sound of her vitals machine, which is making a long, high-pitched noise with no beginning or end. You've probably heard this sound in any number of medical shows. This sound means that the patient has no heartbeat, that the patient is dead, that Eloise is dead. I spring into action and say, why aren't you doing anything? They all just stand and look at me while I hear in the corner, time of death, 7:36 a.m. No, you have to keep trying. You can't just let her die, please. I try to project over my tears. Dr. Ron turns to me and says, I'm sorry, Peter. She's gone. No. No, she can't be gone. My fiance, my best friend, my lover, my support system, the love of my life, she can't be gone. I go over to Eloise and I fall to my knees and lay my head on her chest. Nothing. I hear nothing. There's no heartbeat. It's like she's empty, a hollow shell of what she used to be. I put my hand on her cheek and look up at her. She almost looks like she's sleeping, as if she's Sleeping Beauty and I can wake her with just a single kiss. So I try it. I give her just one kiss on the lips, except this isn't like the fairy tales. She doesn't wake up. She doesn't move. We don't get our happily ever after because she's gone. I lie with my head on her chest for what seems like hours. Eventually, someone who I don't know taps my shoulder. He says, I'm sorry, but we have to take her now. He looks back at the other person who's with him, and they both look at me with pity on their faces. Can't blame them. I would pity me too. I slowly stand up and grab her face in both my hands and kiss her on the forehead and say, I love you more. I step back against the very wall I adorned earlier this morning and let them wheel her away as I look at those the same views of the Appalachian Hills I've been seeing for the past few days. I sit down and just wait. For what? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what to do anymore, so I sit and I sit some more. And I sit even more until someone knocks on my door. It is the man I now recognize as the one who wheeled my fiance away. He has something in his hand and holds it out for me. I thought you might want this. I'm sorry for your loss, he says as he walks away. I close the door and sit back down. I open my hand to see Eloise's engagement ring. I didn't think I had any tears left to cry, but I can feel another one slowly gliding down my face as I stare at her ring. I gave this ring to her a year ago when she promised to spend the rest of forever with me. Turns out forever wasn't actually that long. Suddenly, my vision starts to go in and out, and I can see flashing lights. I start to rub my eyes, but when I open them, it's not a hospital room in front of me, but mine and Eloise's bedroom. The flashing light was actually because of the fan blowing the curtain in front of the sunlit window. I can smell something cooking. It might be bacon. I can hear the sizzling of the pan coming from outside my bedroom door in the kitchen. I get out of bed, open the door, and walk into the kitchen. Oh my God, it's her. Healthy and glowing with a head full of red wavy hair. Eloise. She is in one of her pajama sets and is cooking bacon on the stove and has waffles ready on the counter. I think I simultaneously have a heart attack and choke on my own spit. There must be a sight standing in the doorway, but she just turns to me and says, "Well, hello, sleeping beauty. Look who finally decided to wake up." With a laugh, she slides the plate of waffles toward me on the counter and states, "Don't forget about my mammogram at the Bellevue later today." Author's note. Not everyone in Kentucky has a chance to wake up from nightmares like this one. Kentucky is the leading state in the U.S. for cancer incident and cancer mortality. But this should not be the case. I hope reading this essay has helped you realize the reality of some cancer stories and how much heartbreak can come from having cancer. I further hope this will make you want to do something to change the statistics and to change the reality that so many Kentuckians experience. Thank you.